Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report and another company update. This is actually more of a company introduction as I am chatting with Jose Maria Resources and the president and CEO, Adam Lundin. Jose Maria is traded on the TSX under the symbol JOSE and on the OTC markets under the symbol JOSMF. And the company will soon be listed on the OTCQB. That is in the process and should happen in the very near term. Now, Adam, I want to talk first and foremost about the overall focus of Jose Maria Resources. The focus is in Argentina on a already quite de-risk copper gold project called the Jose Maria property. This is in the San Juan area of Argentina. It's 100% owned by the company, and this project is already up to a pre-feasibility study that was released at the very tail end of 2018 and is working through a feasibility study that should be coming out later this month. Let's start off by recapping where the company stands when it comes to the pre-feasibility study. Adam, can you highlight some of the key numbers when it comes to this Jose Maria project, please?
Yeah, for sure, Corey. Thanks for the introduction. I'm very, very happy to be here. The pre-feasibility study showed a robust project and definitely gave us the confidence to move forward. Some key highlights from the pre-feasibility study was definitely our metal production profile of 125,000 tons of copper, 230,000 ounces of gold, and just under a million ounces of silver for a 20-year mine life. And we expect those all to stay, you know, relatively the same in the feasibility study that we'll be publishing later this month, like you mentioned.
So when it comes to the current resources in the company, it's a large copper, large gold resource with also a little silver component. I understand that the resources will also be updated here in the near term because that last resource came out back in 2016. What are some of the updates in terms of resource, of the resource estimate that you can give us?
Yeah, I think, you know, building off a very strong resource and reserve report, you know, we had 6.5 billion pounds of copper, 6.5 million ounces of gold, and 29 million ounces of silver. Since that resource statement was put out, we've done, you know, over 25 new holes drilled in the project and I believe over 10,000 meters drilled in. So that's given us more confirmation and more definition of our resource. And I definitely, you know, fingers crossed and hopeful that we'll see a uptick in all three metals.
So when it comes to some of the upgrades from the pre-feasibility study into the feasibility study, we are about 2 years out from that pre-feas. Metals prices, especially for precious metals, gold has changed quite a bit. Copper, still relatively, well, around the same level it was back then. What changes should we expect in terms of estimates when it comes to the feasibility?
Yeah, so in the PFS, we use $3 copper. Definitely gonna be leaning towards using the same number and probably will. On the gold side, you know, we are at $1,300. You know, you see the gold price flirting with $1,900 an ounce today. I think, you know, you see a modest uptick. Maybe we'll choose around $1,500 an ounce. And then on the silver side, we'll be around what we used in the PFS as well.
So what do you want people to really focus on when it comes to this upcoming feasibility? Because right now we saw in the pre-feas, right, that this is a large project. The CapEx was estimated at $2.7 billion, payback period of almost 3.5 years. But we are seeing an after-tax NPV at an 8% discount of over $2 billion, an IRR over 18%. What do you want people to focus on for this upcoming feasibility study?
I think the big focus is, you know, we had a world-class engineering firm in Fluor lead the feasibility study for us. I'm very excited to have it released and put it out to the market. I think what you'll see is, yeah, this is a big, large-scale project, 100% owned by our junior company. We've made the discovery in 2005, 2006 and pushed it forward. It's, again, you know, super straightforward. We're mining open pit off the hillside. We'll have three lines, 50,000 tons per day each. So we'll do 150,000 tons per day and big production profile and also uniquely placed, you know, in Argentina, in San Juan, nearby water source, and in a league of our own. And I think the simplicity is going to stand out again.
Now let's talk a little bit about the jurisdiction, the area of Argentina that you are in. Look, Argentina is a good spot to be a miner, but the country does go through some financially tough times fairly consistently, unfortunately. But that doesn't stop mines from being built and mines from operating. Can you take us through some of your neighbors when it comes to successful operations?
Yes, yeah, happy to do so. We've been in Argentina for a long time. My father went down there in the 90s, and we really never left. The two most prolific mines that Argentina has or had was Alumbrera, which was, you know, we were able to win a large portion of that in a tender. That ended up in a bidding war from Placer Dome and Rio Algum. Rio Algum is now BHP today, and they won the bid. And then we made the Veladero discovery, which is in the San Juan province. We had to fight off a hostile from Barrick and did a friendly deal with Homestake. And then Barrick bought Homestake and put Veladero into production. It's still producing today. It's in the same province as us. And they've done a great job and even a better job now with Bristow at the helm. And there's a big skilled labor force in the province, and the province is pro-mining. So I feel very fortunate to be in San Juan. And again, you know, one of the longest running, mining entities in the country. I feel like we have the people's trust and continue to build off our legacy in the country.
Now let's talk about some of that legacy in the country, because Adam, your last name, very well known in the resource sector, and it spans really the globe in terms of Lundin companies that have built resources, built mines, sold companies for billions of dollars. What have some of the successes and some of the history of the Lundin companies been in Argentina specifically?
In Argentina specifically was Argentina Gold, you know, total invested capital there was around $16 million US. We ended up selling that for over $190 million US. It was over 1,000% return on investment. And then also International Musto, which was the Alumbrera deposit. You know, that again was an investment of roughly around $20 million US. Final considerations there was sold for $360 million US. And that was a 1,700% return on investment. And so the model, you know, normally single asset companies and keep building it up, you know, being the largest shareholder in the company, you know, if it makes sense to put it into production and we're going to create shareholder value that way, then that's what we're going to do. And we have the capabilities to do it. Lundin Gold has just proven that in Ecuador, but also at the same time, if there's another way to make create shareholder value with bringing in a partner or an outright sale, we're going to have to, you know, we're open. And again, being completely aligned with shareholders, we're going to do what's best for our stakeholders.
Now, can we talk a little bit about some of the financing options when it comes to this project? Look, the CapEx is a couple billion dollars, might even creep up to $3 billion in this feasibility study. And a couple of years ago, the market, in all fairness, just wasn't really there to build these massive scale projects. But with the improvement in gold prices and even the stability of the copper price around $3, we've seen a lot more money come into the sector. And now it's not out of the question to build these larger projects that, when built correctly, can cash flow for potentially decades. What are some of the financing options that you guys are weighing?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're uniquely placed in owning 100%. It's unencumbered deposit. And also the gold kicker, you know, going to be able to do around 230,000 ounces of gold for over 19 years. And having that ability, you know, having your revenue stream, you know, your co-product gold making up 25 to 30% of the revenue. I see a lot of flexibility in doing something there. I'm very bullish on the copper price, and so is the group. I think if I can leave that and main revenue source untouched or unhindered, that'd be great. But, you know, when Lundin Mining bought Candelaria off Freeport, they did a deal with Franco-Nevada, which was able to bring in 700 million Canadian. The gold profile at Jose is richer. And I think I'm going to, you know, have the optionality there. And then also, again, owning 100%, I think Tech Resources did a phenomenal deal on financing QB2. If there's ability to do something similar on that side, I'll look at that as well. So I definitely see iSide to the bulk of the money and try and keep shareholder dilution down to a minimum. But obviously, there will be a couple more equity raises along the way. But again, if I can do some streaming and offtake and bring in some debt, you know, it's $3 billion is a big number, but not shying away from it.
Okay, one more point on the actual resource, especially when it comes to the probable categories. You have 6.5 billion pounds of copper, 6.5 million ounces of gold, and almost 30 million ounces of silver. You've mentioned that balance of copper and gold, especially for this project. How important is that for moving this project forward and having at least a little bit of a cushion when it comes to not being all in on just one metal?
I think it's huge. I think it provides tons of flexibility and also gives the optionality. You know, you see big gold companies out there talking, you know, they see the underinvestment in the copper space. They see the electrification of the world coming on. And because I have, you know, at least 25% of the revenue stream will come from gold, I think it opens the window to the copper and gold universe being able to look at the project. And that opens the doors to financing possibilities.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the team now, starting out with you. First and foremost, you're the president and CEO of Jose Maria Resources. Give us a little background on your history in the sector.
Yeah, I was, you know, being in the third generation, you know, my grandfather started the business. He needed his kids to help out right away. When the third generation, you know, you had to prove yourself, and I earned my stripes more. We're on the brokerage side of the business. I was working for a Scandinavian firm, was helping raise equity on the natural resource side. And then, you know, was honored when the group asked me to come and run Filo Mining. I've done that for a couple of years, expanded the resource, and now moved over to Jose Maria and you know, got tagged and mandated to move this project forward into construction and eventually into production. So, you know, growing up in the resource family, it's definitely been a lot of talks at the dinner table about moving project forwards and history and how to do it. And social license is everything.
Yeah, it is. You're absolutely right. And you know what? The rest of the team, too, a lot have come from the Lundin group of companies almost across the board. Who else would you like to highlight when it comes to the team, the leadership team?
Well, I just, you know, feel super blessed with the team that we have right now with Ian Gibbs on board coming over from Africa Oil. He has a big history of you know, moving projects forward. He was part of the Tanganyika team that got sold to the Chinese for $2.1 billion. And most recently, he's been a part of Africa Oil, where they made the first ever commercial discovery in Kenya and were able to farm that out successfully to Maersk and move the company forward. So knows how to navigate jurisdictions and knows how to secure big financings. And then on the board, just feel super blessed with you know, Tina Petrouche, who used to head up the environmental social governance efforts at Lundin Energy and now helping me at Jose Maria, but also, you know, Ron Hochstein, who helped secure Fruta del Norte and put it into production, and Paul Conaber as well. You know, a lot of these guys have been in the Lundin group for 20 plus years and I've known them most of my life. So just super honored to be at the helm and have the guidance I do.
All right, let's take care of a couple more of the company fundamentals. Share structure, you have just a little over 300 million shares outstanding. Some of the major holders, your family, the Lundin family, 38% shareholders, about 5% in institutional hands, also 5% in the management and board hands. When it comes to cash on hand, what updates can you give us here to keep progressing this feasibility through and then move through some of the permitting, I'm assuming?
Yeah, so we did a successful equity raise in August. We raised, I believe, you know, just over 31 million Canadian. That will see us through the feasibility study and into the environmental social impact assessment, which we'll be submitting to the Argentine authorities in Q1, and give, you know, gives us enough runway to move forward into basic engineering.
All right, Adam, we're going to wrap it up there. It's a nice overview of Jose Maria Resources. Again, an advanced copper gold project in Argentina. The company should be releasing this feasibility study very shortly, so we will follow up when that news hits the market. And if any of you have questions, whether you're a shareholder, whether you're interested in this story, or just interested in this advanced project in Argentina, please email me directly, fleck@kereport.com. I'll get those questions answered for you next time I have Adam on the show. Adam, appreciate your time. Thank you for this update.
Thanks, Corey. Really appreciate it.